When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome back to The Commons. I'm your host, Brian Phillips, here for another conversation about school life and leadership. I'm joined today by a very special guest, Dana Gage. Dana, thank you so much for joining me.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So we're going to talk about several things about the connection between classical education, classical schools, and the life of the church. And you recently wrote an article for the CIRCE website entitled Neglecting the House of God, question mark at the end. And it resonated with me on a lot of different levels. One, because I'm both a pastor and involved in classical education. And so when I read it, I immediately wanted to have you on the show to talk about it. So thank you for the article. Thanks for joining me to talk a little bit about it. Before we get to that, though, let's get you introduced to the whole audience here. So Dana, if you will, just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. I'm a homeschool mom in New York City. We moved here about 7 years ago because my husband is a pastor of Brooklyn Baptist Church. It's a very descriptive name that we have. We have three kids. They're in 5th, 9th, and 11th grade now. And we live in a really unique neighborhood. It's called Sunset Park. If you're familiar with Brooklyn at all, it's a very ethnic neighborhood and it's predominantly Asian and Hispanic, but our church has people from all over the world. So we have people in our church from China, India, Uzbekistan, Nigeria. So it's a really neat experience to worship with all these people every week.
Mm-hmm. So you've been in Brooklyn for 7 years.
7 years.
Right. So we have a lot of homeschool parents who listen to the podcast and are a real blessing to CIRCE. It's a big part of our audience. Homeschooling is a tall order anywhere. I mean, my wife and I we're in a pretty rural town in North Carolina, and homeschooling is still a tall order, right? even there. So what is it like homeschooling in Brooklyn? Are there unique challenges that you face there?
Really, really the biggest challenge is that there are so few homeschoolers. Hmm. So we don't have co-ops and things like that. But my son actually plays basketball at the YMCA every day. And when he tells the kids he homeschools, they don't believe him. They've never heard of it.
Right.
That's not really a thing, is it? You're making that up. So it's just very rare. So we don't have a lot of other things. But on the other hand, we have New York City.
Yeah.
That has a lot of to do.
Oh, absolutely. A lot of resources. You can have some comparatively elaborate field trips where you are, right?
Yeah, we do.
Yeah. So I guess one of the big challenges then is that homeschooling is really unusual where you are, right? Okay.
A lot of people, when they have kids, I mean, you think about who moves to New York City, it's young professionals a lot of times. So when they have kids or the kids get a little older, they move out of the city.
Right.
In our church. So school age kids are just not as common.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah. Whereas where we are and, you know, different parts of the country and different parts of the world, homeschooling is a viable option. It's you know, relatively common. So there, I guess you're a bit of an oddity, not in a bad way, but a bit of an oddity where you are. Now, so you're homeschooling now, and you and your family are in Brooklyn now. But in the article, you mentioned that before homeschooling, you were a teacher at a classical school, and it was then that I, at least, correct me if I'm reading it wrongly, but it was then that you began to notice a kind of contrast between what was going on in the classical school, in the classical education world, if you will, and the church. Can you tell us a little bit about that contrast that you noticed? What were you seeing?
Well, this probably started back in Nashville. My husband lived in Nashville before that. First of all, he was a chaplain in the Air Force, so we moved around a little bit. But when our kids were ready for school, we moved to Nashville. He was pastoring a church there, and we actually started a classical school there in Nashville. And it was very exciting because another school, a large school, was closing down, and they gave us their 35-acre property.
Wow.
You can imagine all the excitement that was going on. Anyway, it was wonderful. We saw God doing things, and we were very excited. But we were there sort of to revitalize a church, and everyone was very excited about the school, but not very excited about the church. So that tension was already starting there, and that's part of the reason why we ended up in New York City. But I always felt kind of pulled between that. You know, my husband is all in for the church, but I'm more interested in classical education. I mean, and he was too, but there was some tension there. And then when we moved to Manhattan, we moved to Brooklyn, we were all going to school in Manhattan, and there's a great classical school there. Mm-hmm. It only goes to eighth grade right now. And that's part of the reason why we're homeschooling. But even at the school, I felt so pulled away from everything going on at church because there's so many things going on at school and after school. And even the excitement there of learning, you know, classical ed was still developing. So there's so much excitement going on. And then you go to church, that excitement sometimes just isn't there. You know, the vision for church, and you don't really see the benefits of it as quickly as you do at a school. And then I think, I mean, to answer your question about the contrast, a lot of things compared to a good classical school, a church just can seem so shallow. There's a reason the Babylon Bee is so popular. Sometimes you can't tell the difference. You know, you don't even know if it's a joke or not. Is this real? Yeah. Or is this actually, you know, is this a joke? From the music to the Bible studies to, you know, the Instagram post, it seems very shallow. And the school has a lot of respect for the past. It's trying to conform to a standard outside of itself. And it seems like the church is trying to do the opposite and be very edgy. Anything but old-fashioned and traditional. So it seems like they're going in different directions sometimes.
Right. There was an example that you used in the article that, seemed to be a bit of humor to it, but also just a really good, a good contrast. So I'll just read, this is very early in the article. You wrote, children who grew up in church, even those who attend Sunday school and the youth group faithfully, will likely go to college and find themselves biblically illiterate, which, again, speaking in generalizations, of course, I think that's a real threat. And then you said, at the classical school, and I'm inserting here in or homeschool, at a classical school, on the other hand, a child can learn a good catechism, study the Bible on a timeline, read the church fathers, and practice apologetics. Instead of Father Abraham and Oceans, students learn to sing ancient hymns in Latin. First of all, how dare you go after Father Abraham?
that in our children's church.
Right. But it's a good contrast. When you see the sort of the depth of things that can be covered in a good classical school or homeschool, and then what's going on in churches, there is a pretty stark contrast. And I don't know how far across the board this is. I mean, I'm speaking as a evangelical Protestant, and you know, you're in a Baptist church, so you know, I guess we can speak a little bit more authoritatively in the traditions that we're a part of. But I do think this is a big problem across the board. So why do you think that gap exists between what's being done in churches and what's being done by classical educators and in classical schools?
Well, that's a good question. I'm sure there are a lot of answers to that, but one of them, I think, comes from a book I read about 15 years ago, probably. It was called No Place for Truth by David Wells. I don't know if you ever heard of that. But in that book, he talks about the vanishing of theology in general in the church and why it's missing. And one of the reasons he gives for that is he says that Americans see themselves primarily as consumers. That's really our fundamental identity. You know, at our core, we think that we're consumers, that we're out there to shop for something, and that churchgoers are the same way. So even if, you know, even if we want to separate ourselves from the prosperity gospel, which, you know, we probably do, we still go to church for what we can get out of it. And if we do that all the time, then of course the people running the church are going to have to say, what do these people want? What do they think they need? And that's what we're going to give them. So if we keep doing that, that's how things become so shallow, you know, where a school doesn't have to do that.
Now I think there's a lot of truth to that, that we do see ourselves as consumers, or actually maybe the bigger problem is we don't see ourselves as consumers. We're not even aware of it as a problem. Right. And if you look at movements in like the church growth type movement, emergent church kind of movement, you do see that tendency, right? There's always the next gimmick, the next big thing. What can we do to get people here? And it is kind of a principle of whatever it is that you use to draw people in is sort of, you have to do more of that to keep them, right? And so with so many churches, and I know this differs in different parts of the country, but by and large, in a lot of the United States, there's so many churches. So it does become this kind of business model. You know, people choose a church the same way that they might choose a grocery store. Who makes it easier for me? Who has the most stuff? You know, and so I think that's true. One thing though, do you think that it's possible that it seems to me that it's possible that schools might be tempted to do this as well? Now, our family, we homeschool right now, but I have worked in classical schools, and you're in the same boat. You homeschool now, but we're in a classical school. It seems like that consumer mentality could be a tendency for the school too, right? To gain students, build enrollment.
Yeah. And it seems like it is creeping in some schools. I'm sure that can creep in.
Yeah.
But you're targeting a certain kind of person, where churches are more broad. You know, in a school, you're paying for something. And a church and school are different. So a school, you can look at school as a consumer in some ways.
Yeah.
Are you giving me what I want? You know, whereas church isn't supposed to be like that.
Right. It's not supposed to be. And schools as well have to battle that pull to sort of water down their identity or abandon their vocation, you know, in because of those kinds of demands. Now, very early in the article, you observed that, and you're sort of being a bit autobiographical at the very beginning. You observed that the school has replaced the church as the center of the family's life. And that's a really powerful observation. So walk us through what you meant by that, how you first came to sort of notice that.
Well, a lot of that is, of course, my own experience. But I think it's the experience of a lot of other evangelicals. I grew up in a church, and I don't want to use the word literally too much, but I literally grew up in this church. I think I was in that building more than I was in my house, especially during waking hours.
Yeah. And
the school was a ministry of the church. So I never felt any kind of pull to athletic events or really anything. So it really wasn't a temptation, but my whole life revolved around this church and what the church was doing. Even as a teen, I remember my parents didn't want me to get a part-time job like everyone else, because they said, if you get a part-time job, you'll end up working, missing Wednesday night, missing youth group, missing church on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And just, I share that just to show how important it was for all of us to be at church. You know, whenever the doors were open, we were there.
Right.
And it's not just, you know, it's not just school kids. The stats are out. People are missing church now. I mean, I think I saw a statistic recently that even churchgoers are usually there twice a month. You know, if you look at your average church attendance. And in New York, that's it's really more than that. We have people traveling a lot, of course. You know, they're not from here, so they're going to visit their family or they're traveling for work. Mm-hmm. So people are missing church a lot. But I think for families with students, it's just really easy for the school calendar to take over. And that happened to me. So we're going to Manhattan every day. We're commuting a couple hours. I have three kids. Wow. We don't even go to the same campus. So we have, they're all over the place. And we're trying to find them all, get them all home. Of course, we have music lessons after school and sports things going on. And it just took over my life. And church was always getting in the way. So, you know, I think, oh, I can rest on Saturday. Oh no, we have this church event. I think, oh no, why do I have to do that? So it was always getting in the way for me. So I understand what happens. And that wasn't the school's fault. It wasn't Serge's fault. That was my fault for letting that drive our schedule. You know, that was me not prioritizing correctly. And that's easy to do, just to do whatever comes at you, just to be reactive to whatever's going on. But I think we've all seen that happen with people with school things. And, you know, it's not like you even try to hide it anymore. We'll be at church on Sunday. If it rains and our soccer game is canceled, we'll be there.
Right.
No, it's a very simple thing now to be at church if nothing else is going on.
Yeah. Yeah. It becomes, everything else is an obligation. You know, work, right. And now I'm getting, I'm speaking more as a pastor now than I am a classical educator here, but, you know, work and school are obligations, right? You have to be there. You have to be there at a certain time. You have to get a certain thing done. And then church, not so much, right?
Right.
Yeah. So this is, I think you're right. I've seen that as a, you know, as a teacher, as, in administration as well, that, you know, school can, if you're not careful, school leaders can allow the demands of school to really take over. And you mentioned, I've experienced this too. I worked in a church where we had a Christian school. And so, you know, we there was a Wednesday night service or Bible study. So we tried not to give homework on Wednesday nights, you know, tried not to give so much homework over the weekend that it threatened church attendance. Sports schedules didn't interfere with Sundays or Wednesdays. And, you know, so, that was a little bit easier. I mean, the expectations of the church or, the schedule of the church was given priority. Whereas now that's not so much the case, but, going even beyond the typical school schedule, which really, I'm going to go beyond what you said, and so that if it gets me in trouble, it'll just be me and not you. But our whole culture is really built around a school schedule now, mm-hmm. right? So, I mean, from vacations and holidays and, you know, everything. Right. But I would say that this can be a temptation, for different reasons for classical educators, for homeschoolers, for classical schooling families. And it's not just the schedule. There's another part to this that is significant. In classical education, we are trying to cultivate wisdom and virtue. We're reading great books. We're learning great music. We're wrestling with great ideas. There's a high standard, a good kind of rigor to it, if that's the word, and so there's sort of a different feel. They're being called back to something, a rich heritage. But what you described in the article is that there's again, speaking in very general terms, making that qualification, of course, but there is a tendency in broad sections of the church to be somewhat shallow. So there's that tension there too, that I've noticed, where classical educators can be, and including homeschoolers, can be pulled away from the church community because they see what they're doing in their schooling as being more worth their time or more valuable.
Right. That's where I was for sure.
Yeah. So with all of this in mind, between the schedule demands and this kind of gap in what you're learning or what you're being exposed to, I mean, is this a reason to just, you know, give up on the church? What should we do in response to this trend? I mean, as you know, is the answer just kind of, you know, throw up our hands and lament the condition of the church? You know, what should be done?
Well, I mean, this was very personal for me because after leaving my school in Nashville, then my husband really wanted me to stop working at the school because I was gone all the time and tired and et cetera. The commuting is really hard for New Yorkers.
Right.
And he really wanted my help. So it was very practical and I wasn't very excited about it. So I had to rethink through it myself. And, you know, well, first of all, just on a practical level, it's a bad long-term strategy because if you think about who started your classical school or that co-op group, it was probably some people who are very committed to the local church. Mm-hmm. You know, that's where those people come from. The church grows these people and then they go out and do things like this. So even the fact that they're not technically connected, the church and the school, they actually are. And it's kind of an illusion that they're not actually connected because the church and the school need each other. Mm-hmm. So maybe we should need to think about that connection a little more, how they're helping each other. They seem very disconnected right now. But on another level, maybe more importantly, I've been reading the Old Testament a lot this year and thinking about what it means to worship God. And what's happening on Sunday is very different than what's happening in the rest of the week. Mm-hmm. So you're not really worshiping. I mean, even though all of life is worshiping, it's not really worship like Sunday is. So,
right.
And there's a couple things about worship. And one is that God really wants to be prioritized. He doesn't like to be worshiped along with everything else, you know, or get second place. You know, if you read the Old Testament, you see that very starkly. You don't want to do that.
Right.
So you are worshiping God by making him a priority. And worship in the Old Testament often goes with sacrifice. And I'm not talking about the high priest atoning for your sins. We don't have to do that. But a lot of times people want to honor God by sacrificing to him. And they bring him their best things. And it's like they're not acknowledging that God has given them everything. Everything is a gift for them. So they're bringing their best things to him. You know, you see Solomon making all these sacrifices when he builds the temple. So you are sacrificing, whether you're sacrificing your time or that sports game, you, in a way you're making a sacrifice to God when you come to church on Sunday and you're saying, God is worth it. He's more important and you're putting him first. I love that story. I can't remember which prophet it was, but the prophet calls the people out for bringing their diseased sheep. They're blind and just sheep to sacrifice. You know, that is what I do. I'm, you know, I'm giving God the things that are left over, things I don't really need. Mm-hmm. And it's really an act of faith because you're saying, I think that I'm going to put more faith in you than I am in all these things that are going to look good on my kid's resume and these things that I enjoy and that are good things. They're good things. They're not terrible things. But you can make that a sacrifice to God. I'm going to sacrifice you. I'm going to make you first. And I love the story. Eric Little is one of my favorite people because it's kind of like he stands in the room all the time judging you. Because Eric Little, you know, missed the Olympics. So what are you giving up that compares to that?
Right. Yeah. Well, and it is possible though to, in a sense, corrupt good things, right? A lot of people have used really good things two really bad ends. You know, you can make an idol out of something that in and of itself is, could be good. But you know, we never have permission to give up on the church, right? You never have permission or excuse to abandon the body of Christ. And this is something that your article got me thinking about. And I had never really put it all together the way that you did. But I would notice those things that, you know, we talk so much about cultivating wisdom and virtue and all of these very noble aims that the calling of classical education pulls us to. But how do you cultivate wisdom and virtue apart from Christ? Right? I mean, you can't. Christ is our wisdom. Christ is our virtue. So we can't give up on the church, right? That it has to take precedent for us. But there's still this awareness, and I think it's a good observation that there is a difference for whatever reason in the feel and the aim and the kinds of discussions even that are being had in a lot of classical schools and homeschools versus what's going on in a lot of churches. And I wish we had time to talk about all of the potential reasons for that. I think that there is something to be said for the fact that, you know, in schools, students are there 6 hours a day or, you know, give or take, sometimes more, you know, sometimes less. Whereas the church essentially has a few hours a week, maybe, you know.
maybe.
And so, yeah, so I think there's something to be said for that too. There's something to be said for the fact that individual congregations, it is different. It's not a school, so there's not homework. There's not assignments in the same way. And those sorts of requirements. And you're ministering to a broader demographic of people, a broader range of people, of course. But all of those qualifications understood, there is still this responsibility then to the church. So what can the church do to bridge that gap, in your opinion? I mean, what can be done to improve this kind of problem, and whether that's the church itself or the people in the church, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I wish that the church hadn't, again, we're speaking so generally here, but in many ways, I feel like the church gave up on education. Mm. A lot of them had schools and had so much trouble. When we were starting the school in Nashville, someone said, "I wouldn't wish a school on my worst enemy." they are a huge, they're a headache and they cause trouble, but they're very important.
Right.
And my principal, the school that I grew up in, encouraged us to do it and said, yeah, it is a lot of trouble, but it's worth it. Mm-hmm. But I think for me in this situation, I decided to put my energies into the church. Mm-hmm. For example, I didn't like Sunday school, so I decided to change it. And that's what I've been working on the last couple of years, just changing Sunday school and making it better. And that's really fun because we have a lot of kids. You know, some of our kids are children of immigrants. And their parents may not speak English, but they do. Mm-hmm. So it's a really neat opportunity that we have here. And, you know, I've had more time to work on that. And I think that people who are in the classical ed movement, especially teachers, should be leaders in their church. And that's a good example. And then that's an opportunity to change something. You know, in our kinds of churches, there's lots of opportunity for leadership and to bring in new ideas and do things. So what if our classical ed people were putting their energies into the church as well? I think it would make a huge difference.
Well, yeah. And it sounds like you're actually saying that instead of complaining about it, we should actually do something to help.
Right. Take responsibility for it.
That's a very novel concept. Yeah. No, I know that for a lot of people, homeschooling moms and teachers, headmasters, it's a tiring work.
Yeah,
it's exhausting. It is. At the same time, and I think we all know this, but we like to forget it, that you are energized by serving other people. Now, yes, there has to be a time. Even Christ and the disciples got away, you know, to pray and sought quiet and so on. So I'm not discounting that. But I think that being a part of, well, let me put it this way, using those, the gifts and experience that you have in classical education to benefit people who don't have access or opportunity for that otherwise is very important. One of the things that we've done at our church over the years is we do have a lot of people in our congregation who are involved in classical education, but we tried to take those elements that we saw of just wonderful things being done with students in the schools, in classical schools, and then bringing that over. So our children's Sunday school classes basically are the children's catechism. They learn the Bible in a timeline kind of fashion. We're just going straight through the scriptures basically, and then putting that together on the timeline. And then we've made a children's choir, which, and they're learning great hymns. And so we've kept it very simple. I mean, this is the furthest thing from novel, right? I mean, this has all been done for a long, long time. But our hope is that the end result is that our children are going to grow up and know the faith far better than their parents do. You know, that's the hope. So I think that's great, in investing back in the church, and using those gifts.
Yeah. Because we're doing the same thing. We just added catechisms to our Sunday school class. So they all begin with catechisms now. And and we've introduced the timeline. You know, right. These are very simple things. They're not really hard to do.
Yeah.
But, you know, exciting things. I learned that at the classical school. The things I learned there, I brought to the church.
Yeah. So I think that we, at the bottom of this, really, the root of this is that we need to be thankful. I mean, those of us who either have received classical education or are privileged to be a part of it now, you know, be thankful for the things that we're able to learn and the things that we're able to teach and to be a part of, and the great calling that God has given, you know, for us to be a part of cultivating wisdom and virtue and teaching these great things to our children and our students. But we also need to be humble enough to see opportunities rather than complaint, right? Particularly when it comes to the church.
Right. I like seeing it as a gift, because classical ed has been a gift to us. And in that way, we need to offer back thankfulness on Sunday. You know, it's the day that we worship, and we're offering back thanks for all that God has given us, you know, rather than comparing the two and complaining about the church, offering back as a sacrifice. And I was thinking about the sacrifice idea, we think about all the things you want for your kids. And if you're a parent, you love your kids so much, you want everything from them. You don't want them to lose one opportunity. And that's natural. You love them so much. But what do you really want for them? And what I really want for my kids is for them to grow up seeing me love the church and for them to be a part of it. That's so important. So I don't want to sacrifice that for something lesser, even if it's good for them. So this year we have an ESL program at our church, but we added a GED class. Because there's a lot of people in our neighborhood who want to get their GED. And my son has been teaching the math part of that. And of course, he misses a whole night of studying, you know, and gets behind. but it's so worth it, because we go over there and we have this group of people who work all day in Manhattan. They barely make it 7 o'clock at night. And they're there till 9 studying because they want to get their GED, not a college degree. They just want to get their GED. And my son was able to see that even his simple things like geometry and algebra are gifts, and they're privileges that other people wish they had. And that habit of giving back, offering back something that you've been given to someone else, you know, is an experience that I'd rather him have than something else, something greater.
Yeah. That's wonderful. And it's also, it's a good example though of what we were talking about a moment ago about how you are energized and changed and you see things in a different perspective when you serve other people, right? Yeah. You become aware of things that you sometimes take for granted. And I think that we can often do that. You know, I've been guilty of it. I'll just speak for myself here instead of, you know, we've had to use so many generalizations. So just speaking for myself, I've been involved in classical education long enough to where it's easy to be bothered by all of the things that we can't do. You know, we're aware that we're trying to recover something that was lost. And so we have this desire to, you know, to really figure out the perfect way to do classical education. And I forget how much further along my children are, or my students would be, and even I am, you know, than so many. I mean, this is a real opportunity. It's a blessing. And we can, as always, we take our blessings for granted, right? Mm-hmm. So that's a great story. I'm glad to hear that your son's able to be a part of that. That's wonderful. I want to say, as a pastor of, you know, one congregation, I don't have the authority to make these decisions, or maybe even I should hesitate to say this a little more, but I think it's important that churches too begin to rethink the place of education in the ministry of the church. That has largely been abandoned. I agree with you completely about that. I pastor a Reformed congregation, and so we do, most of the children in our church are baptized, and part of the vows that are taken by the parents and the church, the whole congregation answers back that they will help in the name of God to bring up the children, you know, that child that's being baptized in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Of course, that primary responsibility, I mean, the parents take those vows first, and then the congregation takes it back to the family that, you know, we will help you in this. And I wonder how many churches have taken that vow. I mean, because it's a pretty traditional vow. Mm-hmm. We didn't write that, you know, we're not the only church doing that, but how many churches are taking those vows every time someone is baptized, every time a child is baptized or a child is dedicated, we'll say that kind of vow is taken, and how many churches are just right off the bat completely forgetting about it. Mm-hmm. So churches really need to reconsider their role in and their responsibility for providing Christian education to their families. I won't go into specifics, but I know that there are churches that actually weave those kinds of funds into their mission budget, so that if there's a family that cannot financially provide a Christian education for their children, the church helps. You know, they're starting there in their congregation, in their community. So thank you for calling back attention to some of that, even though I elaborated in ways that you did that you didn't in the article. But
I agree with that. And I will say, I've always thought that if you really wanted to give your child a good Christian education, you could probably do it. Even if you couldn't afford classical school, you could homeschool, you could find something to do. Mm-hmm. But in New York City, that is not the case. Mm. I would say for a lot of people, it is impossible unless they move out of the city, they do something. So we have single parents from other countries. So they really don't have a lot of options. They can't stay home. The only classical school Christian classical school in all of New York City that I know of costs about $25,000 a year.
Wow.
So that really makes it not possible for most people.
Right.
And, you know, again, there's not a homeschool co-op, and a lot of people, they can't afford to stay here if they're not working. Yeah. So it's really not possible. And like you said, I really wish the church would step in and help out with that.
Well, and even if not, even if the church was not able to provide for all of that financially, it's at least taking a step in the right direction to to reprioritize the time that that child does spend in the church and what they're learning during that time, right? In the way that they're learning. So there's always, there are always baby steps that can be taken in the right direction, even if, you know, even if you, you look at a problem and think, wow, we're just miles away from where we need to be. Well, the only way that you bridge a gap of many, many miles is just take a step, right?
Right.
So, I would encourage everyone, visit the CIRCE website. There are always tons and tons of things on there to listen to and read. But, in particular, let me commend, Dana Gage's article, Neglecting the House of God. Well worth your time. It leaves you with a lot to think about. And so, Dana, thank you so much for joining me today to talk a little bit about it. And thank you for the work that you're doing, both you and your husband in the church there in Brooklyn, and of course also the work you're doing with your own children and homeschooling. So thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, I'm Brian Phillips. Thank you for tuning in to The Commons. Until next time, thanks for joining me. May God bless the work of your hands.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.